Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are, wherever you're coming at us in this world, you're coming to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I'm your host for this show. It's a fun weekly variety show here on KCIW Radio in Brookings, Oregon. We are about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S., the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest, the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet. And we have an unbelievable guest in the studio for you today. The Grand Marshal of our parade, the namesake for our town of Brookings, Oregon, David Brookings, welcome.
Hi, Misty. Thank you.
Hi. I'm so glad to have you here. It's so much fun to meet you in person after listening to your music and learning about who you are. Would you be so kind to tell our listeners who you are and why you're here?
I'm here because my great-great-grandfather founded the town in the early 1900s. It was 1908, and it was at the time kind of the middle of nowhere, and they needed a name for the place, and the Brookings Till and Lumber Company was their business, and so they named it Brookings. And I'm just thrilled to be here and meet you, and everybody here has just been so nice and wonderful to talk to and hang out with. It's been really
It's so awesome. And so you live in San Jose, right?
San Jose, yeah.
San Jose, California. Mm-hmm. So you're driving up the coast and you're getting all these signs, mileage signs for Brookings, which is your last name. Was that weird?
It was weird, but I saw that 2 or 3 years ago the last time I was here. But for my family, Shelby and the girls were saying, oh, Brookings, that's cool.
Kind of cool, huh? Kind of trippy. I mean, check out my little leather-bound book with your name on the front.
Look at that.
Right? That's neat. that was a gift from the Brookings Institution, also related to your family.
Yes.
Your great-great-grandfather's cousin.
Cousin Robert S.
Yes.
Was sort of the financier for John E. Brookings to come out here and build this place up. But Robert was arguably the most successful Brookings as far as was the wealthiest. And so he did start up the Brookings Institute, and there's also Brookings Hall in St. Louis, Missouri at St. Louis University is his namesake too.
That's so cool. I mean, here you are, it's 110 years later after all of this, or 111 years later after all this, you know, big family stuff went down, and now you're an ambassador for your family, with your family, in Brookings, Oregon, all these years later, and you got to be in a parade today for your first time ever, is that right?
It was so wild. It was great.
It was great.
I was just, you know, we were just waving to people and saying, Brookings, and it was just cool.
And really your family cool. was with you.
They had a blast. It was really fun.
And let's not, you know, you were the Grand Marshal. I mean, you were the Grand Poobah. You were the big deal today.
Well, but I'm not a big deal to them. I mean, I am, you know, as much as possible, I guess, but they just think it's just funny, the idea of me being, you know, a grand anything. But so they keep me humble for sure.
That's so great. So tell us about your music. I want to know, you woke up one day and said, gee, I want to do music.
Well, when I was young, I really liked I liked stuff like the Monkees and Buddy Holly and
yes.
the Beatles and
yeah.
Chuck Berry. My parents, and they really had that oldies stuff playing, and I just went for it and was drawn to it more than some of the modern stuff. I mean, Milli Vanilli or the Monkees or the Beatles are a tough call, but I'll go Beatles, I think. So
oh, yeah.
Some of the stuff that was big when I was growing up is, you know, some of it was really cool, but I like those songs that are timeless, and they're always going to be good songs, and people are still listening to them today, and I definitely am.
I know. I checked you out quite extensively on your own website, davidbrookings.net, and all over YouTube and on SoundCloud. I mean, I spent some time with your music. I spent some time with your catalog, and I noticed that you did 209 Beatles songs in 209 days. Where did that wacky idea come from, and how did you get through it?
There's a pot brownie short in California
nice.
That's a little stronger than elsewhere in the country. And
yeah.
my wife's friend, I partook of one day and was so enamored with it that I had this idea to do all the Beatles songs. So I started chronologically with Love Me Do.
Yes.
And, I'm pretty sure my eyes are a little red in the Love Me Do video, but I remember being possessed with this idea of I'm going to do all the Beatles songs. And then they started getting hits a few weeks in. And so I don't like to, you know, start something and not finish it.
Yeah.
So we just kept doing it. And then Shelby and McKinley got in on it, and they started singing and picking up whatever instrument was around. And so we got through all of them. It took, well, I guess, 209 days.
209 days. And
almost
now Shelby...
A year.
She's a singer, but not, she was not a musician, right? And there was at one point in one of the songs, I think it was in Not a Second Time, song number 31 of 209, and you got her actually to do some piano playing in that song. Is that right?
Keyboard? Yeah, just on our, whatever, it was either a Casio or a Yamaha, but I just kind of wrote out the notes, the number of sequence she should play, the notes, and she banged it out, and that one took a few takes. Some of those songs took more takes than others, but I was proud of her on that one. She sounded really good.
I could see at the very end, she kind of looked at you like, did we get it this time?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We got it.
I loved, she said 109 out of 209. I can't help it, but your daughter, McKinley, I'm guessing she was like 4 or 5 in the video.
She was little, yeah.
She's got Pink Kitty, and at one point, Pink Kitty's up on your shoulder, and she says, you know, do you think they can see me, Daddy? It was just so cute.
Yeah, she was a big part of those videos.
That's so neat. Well, I love that in that series of videos, your whole family, your family life, your house, it's all shown in there. You know, you're inside, you're outside. Some are recorded in a bathroom, some in a living room. It's just, it's neat to see someone who's, you know, let's just be frank here, kind of a rock star, you know, in your famous private life. It's cool.
You're sweet about that. Well, I thought it would be cool to mix up the background. So some are inside, some are out, and mix up the guitars and have a different sort of a different look to the background of each one. So we moved around some.
Yeah, it's super cool. So tell me about, picking up a guitar at age 9. What happened after that?
It's hard to describe. It was just it.
Like it just became a part of
that
you?
That was just it. Yeah. I just started, it was never away from me. I started playing it all the time. Even before I could play, I just liked messing with it. And it's a blessing and a curse, I guess, to know what you want to be and what you want to do that early, because it was a one-track mind kind of thing. And I just started writing songs shortly thereafter and been doing it since.
So if people want to listen to your music, they can surely find you on davidbrookings.net. They can find you on all the basic social media platforms, right?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and Instagram are the two main ones I do. And then as far as them listening, the website for sure, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube, it's everywhere. All 8 albums are.
Isn't that great? I know we've talked before about, we don't care what anybody says, you know, anybody who's playing music, what do they really want?
Right, they want to be the Beatles, the Rolling Stones,
right.
I think.
Fame and fortune.
But over time, your visions and goals change. At this point, I just want to support my family through playing music, whatever that means, if it's songwriting or selling songs for whatever, or just playing gigs, and to contribute that way to help the family is what my goal is now. So I keep doing it.
And really, when it comes right down to it, you're a family man. This is who you are.
Yeah, I love being a dad and try to be a good husband, good person, and good songwriter, and I'm gonna see where that leads. So I just keep doing it.
I know we only have a couple minutes left. Talk, if you would, about your day job, because the story about your day job and how you got there is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I work. October will be 10 years that I've been with Apple Music, formerly and still currently iTunes. But I moved from Richmond, Virginia to Memphis in 2001, and in 2003 started working at Sun Studio, mm-hmm. where Elvis and Johnny Cash and a lot of those 50s legends started. I was a tour guide for almost 7 years before I gave Steve Jobs a tour in spring of 2009. And the funny thing is, I know who Steve Jobs is, but I didn't know what he looked like.
Mm-hmm. So did you not even know it was him?
I didn't know it was him.
Wow. And,
But I figured, well, this is a private after hours tour. I should probably give this man a CD. So I gave him a CD and told him it was kind of Beatles and Bob Dylan influence type stuff, and not realizing those are two of Steve Jobs' favorite artists. So
wow.
I've wondered sometimes, did that have anything to do with it? But a few weeks later, I got an email asking if I wanted to work for iTunes, and they, of course, I did, and they
yeah,
moved
let
us
me
out.
Think about
let me
that.
Think
yeah.
about that. Okay, you twisted my arm. So they moved us out in the fall of 2009, and it's just been wonderful. They had to train me on the computer part, because I had an iPod. That was it. I'd never touched a Mac.
Yeah.
But I hope he saw that the passion and that I love music, and that's what he wanted for iTunes and for that service. So that's what I try to do. So I work on oldies and catalog music still for Apple.
I love what you told me about, recount the story of your last time, your last encounter with Steve.
Yeah, he retired from Apple just 2 months before he passed away. And so about a month after he retired, I was in the Apple cafeteria and I saw him, and I didn't know if he was going to get better. No one knew if he'd get better or not, but I thought, well, this is my chance to say something to him.
Yeah.
So I tapped him on the shoulder, and at first he looked at me like, who are you? But I said, Steve, it's David. I showed you around at Sun Studio. And he said, oh, how are you? And he said, that tour was the only fun thing I did in Memphis.
Oh, and my goodness.
I said, well, I just want to tell you thank you so much for what you did for my family, and I promise not to let you down, and I'll think different, because that's the Apple slogan.
Yeah.
And he said, I hope you'll be very happy here. And I never saw him again after that. So it was an amazing thing he did for us, and call him Uncle Steve.
Yeah, big deal for your family.
Yeah, it changed whatever trajectory life was on. That had a huge impact on the rest of my life, and I was 30 when that happened. So
wow.
It was 10 years ago now.
My goodness, I know you got to go. I've got two final questions for you. The first one is, what do you love most about Brookings, Oregon?
I love that. I think one of the things is that you can ride down the road and there's not a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
That's a weird answer maybe, but
no,
I love
awesome
that the
answer.
Water's right out there.
Yes.
I like that it feels like it's far away from everything, because it is. I like that the people have been just so cool. And it's not just because I'm Brookings. I'm watching them interact with each other. It's just a nice town.
Yeah.
It's everybody here has been great. And that's just some of the stuff that jumps out. I like the whole vibe about it. I was saying, Shelby and I were talking about, we should be here more. I want to come up here and play more.
Yeah.
And even crazy talking in the future about even retiring here. It's just awesome. I really love it.
It's a great place. I know I walked by, Eminem had a house here for a while, and I walked by him in the market one day, and I just said, hey, Marshall. That was it. You know, I didn't say anything to him.
Eminem had a house in Brookings?
Yeah, right here in Brookings.
Wow.
I know. And he's always just kind of cool, but a lot of high level people have houses here and they jet in and they're all like real anonymous, and you know, then they go away and go back to their
regular
lives.
Well, that's another thing I didn't know, is that the airport is at Oakland to Crescent City is an option. So
right.
That's cool.
Super cool. Last question. What do you love most about music and being a musician?
I think being a musician falls in the same line as being a writer or a painter or an architect. I think it's the arts. I have such a respect for it. So today getting to judge that art show was cool, because you could see the different perspective, and there's opportunity to do that through music. So writing songs is my favorite thing about music. I think that's what I'm supposed to do. I like singing and performing, but if I had to pick between singing, performing, or writing, I'm a writer, songwriter first, I think. So that's my favorite thing about it, that you can make the story and craft it and build it and make it how you want it to be.
You know, we had talked about an article you had read once in The Onion about finding your purpose and finding your passion and only doing the thing that you would want to do every day of your life for the rest of your life. And that's what you do.
Yeah, that was a really, that headline was supposed to be satirical, funny, you know, but it's true. Find what you love and do it every day on nights and weekends for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I think if you're doing what you want to do, I think that's the best chance for happiness, but also just success. And I hope so. That's what I'm trying for.
Well, you're certainly doing that, and you're making a difference in the world with your music and with your heart and your soul and your family. And thank you.
Oh, thank you, Misty. Thank you so much for having me on.
I so appreciate it. Although David Brookings does not live here, this place has his name and his imprint and his family's history all over it. Well, wasn't that a fun interview with David Brookings? You know, it's really cool to talk to the great-grandson of the founder of our town here in Brookings, Oregon. You know, again, in case you missed it, I know you couldn't have missed this, but you are tuned in to KCIW 100.7 FM on your radio dial. And it's so great to have you here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. You know, David Brookings, it was such a neat interview because he came into the studio after a very, very jam-packed weekend. I mean, he was here for his second time ever to the little town of Brookings. He came down to the studio immediately before he did a two-hour set upstairs at the Oxenfree Public House. And I got to tell you, you know, that set was beautiful. The music was beautiful. But really, David Brookings the human is a really cool guy. He's interesting. He's incredibly talented. You know, he plays the guitar. He sings. He's got a velvet voice. He's got just absolutely magic hands on the guitar. And he's just fun. I mean, he has a real sparkly personality. And that makes me think that his whole family must be that way, to have so far long ago created and helped create this sweet little town, this little fishing village of Brookings, Oregon, you know, right next to Harbor, Oregon, right here on the Oregon coast. And, you know, I always like to say that we're here in the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest, and that this is about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. It's the home of daffodils in December. You've heard this before, flowers all year round and the nicest people you'll ever meet. And of course, that's what we just did with David Brookings. So David, if you tuned into this interview, this is Misty Young from the Ocean Mist Power Hour telling you again, thank you so, so much for coming into the studio. You know, I know you were in town with Danny and Mary Freitas for the Azalea Festival, and I know how packed your schedule was. It was incredibly busy. And the fact that you took time to come into the studio and calmly sit and talk with us for a few minutes was really special. I thank you for that. And especially because just 2 days before, we had an almost, well, it was a full hour-long conversation that was just phenomenal. It was a great interview. And unfortunately, our technology garbled it. It wasn't the KCIW technology. It was the Misty Young technology. Somehow, some way, a fantastic interview that went awry in the techosphere. So thank you for being so gracious with your time, David, and for sharing your story and your music and your life with the people here in Brookings, Oregon. Now, I got something very interesting to do. You know, when I started the Ocean Mist Power Hour early in the year, late last year, when I got invited to maybe consider doing something with the radio, I started thinking, well, you know, what would I do? I mean, radio sounds like fun. It sounds interesting. And it occurred to me that we're kind of isolated here, right? We're out on the coast. I mean, everything to the west is fish. Everything to the east is little towns and lots of trees. North and south of us are some big cities, but they're pretty far away and they're not easy to get to, right? I mean, people come here from San Francisco, from Portland, from Medford and Grants Pass, and all over the world, of course. And aren't we lucky? Isn't it our own little secret? We get to wake up here every day. How precious is that? People save up their whole lifetime to see the Oregon coast one time, and we get to look at it every single day. You know, just a couple days ago, I drove up to Gold Beach to take care of some business up there. I'm part of the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and I do public outreach for the Coast Guard Auxiliary. So I went out, I was talking about recreational boater safety, went up to the Rogue Outdoor Store into the Visitor Center and took them some pamphlets and some information and some little maps on how to cross the Rogue Bar and, you know, things about life vest safety. You guys, if you've listened to the Ocean Mist Power Hour, you know safety is a big, big topic for me. It's huge. I mean, you know, I'm going to make a claim here. This claim, ready? Here we go. 100% every single person who's listening now, ever did listen, ever will listen, or ever before walked the earth has something in common. Every one of us. No, it's not that we all have blonde hair, blue eyes like I do. Nope, it's not that. It's this. You have a body. And you only have one chance, really. You have a chance. You have many chances, actually, every single day to keep your body safe. And so, yes, I'm a little bit fixated on safety. Yes, I like life vests. And yes, that's why I participate with the Coast Guard Auxiliary. But back to the story. When I was on my way up to Gold Beach, I was driving along the highway and I was just zenning out on some awesome music, you know, a little bit of chanting and singing as I'm going up the coast and harmony, and just, it was just beautiful and peaceful. And I looked at it and I thought, my gosh, you know, this is my commute. Wow. You know, I'm commuting up to Gold Beach for one day and I'm looking at these gorgeous haystacks and fabulous trees, and there's eagles and there's vultures and there's gulls and there's waves and there's fog and there's clouds and there's sunshine. It was so amazing. It was so amazing. We're really lucky to be here. Ah, that was a good rant, wasn't it? Okay, so about the time that David Brookings' family was here creating the town of Brookings, another one of the Brookings relatives was creating something in the East Coast called the Brookings Institution. And when I was thinking about what would we talk about on a radio show, all kinds of ideas were flittering through my head. You know, I don't have a lot to say personally, but I'm interested in a ton of stuff. So if you ever look up the Ocean Mist Power Hour and see what it is we talk about, you'll notice that it is a variety show. So sometimes we bring in guests, sometimes we read articles, and sometimes we talk about information that's brought to us by the Brookings Institution. And that's all with permission. So I reached out to the Brookings Institution, which is a nonprofit public policy organization. It is based in Washington, D.C. Their mission is to conduct in-depth research that leads to new ideas for solving problems facing society at the local, national, and global level, which is pretty cool, I think. And I think about, you know, again, here we are out in the middle of nowhere, really. I mean, we're on the Pacific Ocean. As you know, we're about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. I think Cape Blanco is as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. So I'm claiming it. We're about as far west. But, you know, we aren't absolutely cosmopolitan and metropolitan. So when I reached out to the Brookings Institution many months ago, I said, look, our town is named after the Brookings family, and the Brookings Institution is named after the Brookings family. Started, our town was started by the Brookings family, and the Brookings Institution was started by the Brookings family. So I said, gee, you know, we're not cosmopolitan and metropolitan, and you are, and I think you could help up level our thinking in some ways with the material that you provide, the in-depth analyses that you provide, the experts in government and academia from all over the world who provide this quality research, policy recommendations, and analysis on a really wide range of public policy issues. Would you be willing to let us on the Ocean Mist Power Hour share your information? You know, and a little bit of me was like, oh, they're going to say no. You know, and my belief is the answer is always no unless you ask. I mean, that is something I say all the time, no matter what. It doesn't matter if you're asking mom if you can go to the beach or dad if you can borrow the car keys, or your grandchildren to clean their rooms up. The answer is always no unless you ask. And so I asked, and guess what they said? Yes, absolutely. We'd love for you to share our information. And then they sent me a swag box. It was kind of cool. I got a coffee cup and a water mug and a really cool little leather-bound notebook that says Brookings on the front. And it's pretty neat and made me happy. So they do research. Their research and agenda has recommendations. They're rooted in open-minded inquiry. And they have 300 plus scholars that represent diverse points of view. Research topics cover foreign policy, economics, development, governance, and metropolitan policy. Now, look, we're not metropolitan here, right? We know that. We're rural here. But it helps to have and open our minds to new points of view and new ideas. And I'd like to just read one little piece about the history of the Brookings Institute. And then I'm going to open it up to a piece of research that they've done that's very relevant and timely that I think you'll like. So, the Brookings Institution traces its beginnings to 1916, when a group of leading reformers founded the Institute for Government Research. Remember, this is the Brookings family that did this. That it was the first private organization devoted to analyzing public policy issues at the national level. And what a great organization it has become. Here is a piece of research that they have done. It's actually a piece of research that they brought together to us from Tom Wheeler. This was published on Tuesday, July 9th, and it is a report by Tom Wheeler. Now, Tom Wheeler served as the 31st chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. That's the FCC. He served as the 31st chairman of the FCC from 2013 to 2017. And the paper that we're going to review today is adapted from a presentation that he made at the request of the GAO, which is the Government Accountability Office. Ready? We're going to read the report 5G in 5 not-so-easy pieces, okay? This is a long report. Now, I'm going to give you some commentary occasionally throughout it, but let's hear about 5G. If you're a little bit confused about what is 5G, why does it matter, what's it going to do for me, if anything, this is going to be the place where you're going to get the information. Now, one more thing before I launch in. If you like what you're hearing here on KCIW and you want to take it a little bit further, just log in to brookings.edu. That's brookings.edu on your browser from your phone, your iPad, your tablet, your laptop, your desktop, doesn't matter where you go. But you can go right in there and find all of these fantastic reports and blog posts and videos about topics that come from highly intelligent people. You know, like, I'm not one of those highly intelligent people, but I like learning from those folks. So here we go. This is 5G in 5 not so easy pieces. Throughout the world, ink is being spilled and electrons exercised in a frenetic focus on fifth-generation wireless technology, or 5G. The 5G discussion, with all its permutations and combinations, has grown to resemble an elementary school soccer game where everyone chases the ball, first in one direction, then another. In classic network engineering terms, the noise surrounding 5G is interfering with the signal about just what 5G is and what is necessary for its introduction. Consideration of 5G is far more serious than the so-called 5G race, concocted by those seeking to advantage themselves in the business or political market, especially the political market. There are five often misunderstood facts to know about 5G. Here they are. 5G is revolutionary because it replaces the hardware components of the network with software that virtualizes the network by using the common language of Internet Protocol, IP. Now, some of this, guys, I'm just telling you personal commentary, some of this is over my head. But, you know, the more we learn about topics like this, the better we can understand it. And then if it affects us at all, we'll have a better understanding of it as we move forward in life. So 5G is revolutionary. Next, 5G is evolutionary, as both its new radios and the core network functions are defined as a progression from 4G. Like 4G before it, in most markets, 5G will roll out in steps. 5G is not transformational per se. What will be transformative are the applications that will use the network. The United States was not the first to deploy any of the G's of wireless networks, but nonetheless dominates the wireless ecosystem because of the innovative technologies developed by the American entrepreneurs for those networks. 5G is a cybersecurity risk because the network is software-based. Earlier networks' reliance on centralized hardware-based functions offered a security-enhancing choke point. Distributed software-based systems, per se, are more vulnerable. And finally in here, 5G is spectrum-dependent. In the long run, this means new spectrum allocations. While those are underway, however, the evolution has begun using old spectrum assignments. All right, so we kind of set the stage with that. Now it says winning 5G is not so much a race as it is a process. Characterizing 5G as a contest demeans its great technological process and the policy challenges that progress presents. 5G should be more than a political talking point. The new network represents the need for a meaningful policy strategy. What is missing in today's 5G policy discussion is a focused identification of deliverables that go deeper and are more meaningful than the ill-defined winning of a so-called 5G race. So to consider this, let's parse 5G into five not-so-easy pieces. What will it do? What is the technology and what about spectrum? What about cybersecurity? What are the hidden issues? And does first-to-tape really matter? Well, let's answer those questions in order, starting with what will 5G do? To listen to its proponents, 5G is on par with the genius of Edison. For equipment manufacturers, it is a new revenue stream at a time when the 4G market was becoming saturated. For wireless carriers, it similarly offers a vision of high-margin network-based applications in place of today's commoditized carriage of other companies' data. And for political actors, 5G is the perfect excitement vehicle, something new and better, the promise of which could be theoretically lost without the actors' decisive leadership. Perhaps, however, we should listen to Bill Stone, Verizon's Vice President of Technology Development and Planning. Wisely, Stone recently warned, there is a potential to overhype and underdeliver on the 5G promise. There's no question as to the importance of 5G. Now remember, this is just my own personal commentary coming in here. We're listening to the former director of the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, and this is what he said. There is no question as to the importance of 5G. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm learning something here because I really don't know anything about 5G. So this is new to me too. It is the most significant network overhaul in history because the alchemy of digital technology allows the transformation of what was always done in hardware to become functions accomplished in software. This is so cool. I did not know this. I always thought, oh, 5G means new towers and new racks and new wires and stuff. I had no idea it was a software thing. So this is neat. Then, with such a virtualized network, the power of lingua franca of internet protocol, somebody may want to look up lingua franca. I don't know. That's like a new term to me. Lingua franca, Franca. Is that French or something or a Latin? I don't know. But it says the power of lingua franca of internet protocol takes over to eliminate the need for specific technology protocols for specific functions. Yet, while 5G holds great promises, the wisdom of Stone's admonition should be our North Star. Remember what Stone said, it's easy to overhype and underdeliver, so this should be our North Star. It is time to take a deep breath and realize that 5G is something more than marketing slogans or technology to be weaponized for political purposes. Interesting. As part of the lead-up to the 2016 allocation of the world's first 5G dedicated spectrum, I told the National Press Club, quote, "If anyone tells you they know the details of what 5G will deliver, walk the other way." Insofar as the potential new services 5G could enable, it is an admonition that still stands some 3 years later. 5G will be both evolutionary and revolutionary. At first, consumers will notice only incremental improvements as 5G is used principally for capacity expansion. Over time, however, an all-internet protocol-based network will open new possibilities. Kind of cool, isn't it? I'm a little bit excited about it. I'm learning a lot here. 5G is a vast framework for the networked application of spectrum. When the functions of the network are virtualized in software, the nature of the network is transformed from its traditional role of transporting information between points to abstracting and orchestrating digital information within the all-digital network. Because it is a software-driven network, 5G may be the last physical network overhaul in generations, as upgrades will now be only a matter of replacing software and low-cost commodity components. Wow, this is fascinating. You know, I never realized that this was all going to become a software thing, and that's a pretty bold statement, what he just said. What did he say? This was amazing. Maybe 5G may be the last physical network overhaul in generations. Whoa. I mean, that's a big deal to say that. I mean, how many of us have ever seen somebody working on a telephone pole or a cell tower? Like, that's a big statement. Last physical network overhaul. Wow. The details of the new applications that will use the network are still in the imagination stage. Wow, we're on the frontier of something here. How they will function, however, is not. The ubiquitous internet protocol will be the language of both the network architecture and the applications that run on it. Thanks to IP, internet protocol, 5G will be able to run multiple concurrent application layers, each tied together by IP, as opposed to legacy telecom networks that could only perform tasks sequentially. This capability ignites innovation potential while exposing 5G to the vast array of resources inherent to cloud computing. That's kind of cool, isn't it, to think about, you know, in your house, maybe you've got your TV running over internet. You might have Alexa running in the background. You ask her what time it is or when is high tide or what's the temperature outside. You know, we can't just walk outside anymore. We got to ask for the number from Alexa. You know, maybe your phone is running on internet, voice over internet protocol, VOIP. All these different devices that we have, they're all running concurrently, simultaneously, when in the past, God, how many people, raise your hand, I'm raising my hand in the studio, can remember when you'd, I'm going to go get on the internet, and you'd go click, 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 and then the thing would go doo-dee-doo-dee-doo-dee, and then remember those weird sounds that used to come with the old dial-up? That's so amazing. Even my daughter is old enough to remember the old internet sounds when the modem, remember the modem, the modulator, demodulator would be accessing the internet? Oh my God, how long has it been since we've had that? Wow. Just a little sidebar there, guys, just kind of thinking out loud here. Yes, it hurts. Just what collapsing everything to IP, as opposed to the tradition of unique protocols for in unique applications, means in terms of applications is up for grabs. Wow, they don't really know. I mean, it sounds to me like we're reading this article and they don't really know exactly what's going to happen with this new technology. And that's because we're humans. We have the human condition. We're designed and driven for curiosity, for learning and growth. That's awesome. It is revealing, for instance, this article continues, that Verizon is running a crowdsourced Build on 5G Challenge contest in which they solicit ideas for 5G products, services, or applications. Answering this question will be crucial to how and at what speed 5G is deployed. As one trade publication put it, operators are looking for the killer 5G app because the cost of rolling out 5G networks is expensive and the costs won't be recouped by simply increasing prices for mobile connections. While innovators explore the promise of an all-IP world, early mass-market applications of 5G will probably be more pedestrian. One industry analyst suggested that, like other internet experiences, the high-speed, low-latency realism of 5G might make pornography an early money-making application. Ew. Another analyst suggested that real-time gambling during sporting events will take advantage of 5G's high-speed, low-latency connections. In other words, if previous internet history holds, when consumers slip on 5G-enabled AR and VR headsets, it may not just be for a tour of Tutankhamun's tomb. That's interesting. Now, AT&T's first 5G customers have been businesses that used it as a replacement for their wired local area network, or LAN. Verizon's first 5G customers are what one might call wireless cable, a service that delivers high-speed broadband capacity to homes in competition with the local cable company. The ability to handle a multitude of Internet of Things, IoT, connected devices has also been promoted as a 5G deliverable. While most IoT applications don't require high bandwidth, even at slow data rates, thousands of IoT, Internet of Things devices communicating at the same time will require 5G capabilities. You know what I think is kind of cool is the idea that Internet of Things, this is already happening right now, that you could literally pass products by a barcode scanner as you take them in and out of your fridge. You know, it'd be a little hard to tell your fridge that this carton of almond milk that I'm putting in is only 1/4 full, but your fridge would be able to see maybe the, you know, you press an empty button or something as you take it out, and then your fridge will send a shopping list to your phone for you. That's what Internet of Things does, that kind of thing. Or, you know, sometime in the future, we're going to have these ovens, and they may actually already exist, where it is refrigerator capable. So you pull out your food, you put it in the refrigerator oven, get that? Refrigerator oven. And then later while you're at Fred's or, you know, you're in Crescent City or you're on your way back from Medford, you whip out your phone and you tell the oven to turn on. Now your food's been in there in a safe, protected way, right? Internet of Things, it's now not going to be a fridge anymore. Boom, it's going to turn over to thermal and become an oven and it's going to heat your food and cook it up. And by the time you walk in the door, your dinner's ready. That kind of stuff is cool, isn't it? I mean, talk about big time, you know, technology advances. Back to the article, while all the IP network enables Buck Rogers-like potential, the people old enough to remember that are smiling. At this point, there is one driving force behind 5G, and that is the application of the new technology to expand network capacity. Now, I hope you're learning something here. It's very clear to me, as we're reading through this article, there's no way we're going to finish the entire article by the time our time for the Ocean Mist Power Hour is done. So if you are just joining us here on KCIW, here on 100.7 on your radio dial, welcome to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. Thanks to our technician today, Pi White, who is working with us. And thanks to all the folks who support this community-supported radio. It's a lot of fun to get out on the radio and to talk about interesting things. And again, we're not going to be able to finish this article. This report is a long report. So at some point, we're going to wrap it up and we won't be able to get to the very end of it. Should you like to read the very end of it, you're going to go to brookings.edu. You're going to search for 5G and five not-so-easy pieces. We'll get through as much of it as we can. So back to the article. Thanks in large part to the ever-growing demands for wirelessly delivered video, U.S. carriers are forecast to run out of available 4G spectrum as we approach 2022. Oh my gosh, that's just a couple years down the road. Today, for instance, about 3/4 of mobile network data is used for video traffic. Disney, for instance, reports that over 70% of its content is today accessed via a mobile device. That's up from 40% just 4 years ago. The Cisco Visual Networking Index forecasts a greater than threefold jump in global mobile video traffic from 2019 to 2022. Wow. Buck Rogers will come, but first 5G will be more of the same. As the industry analysts at New Street Research put it, quote, the primary role of 5G will be to enable operators to continue to add capacity at acceptable costs, end quote. Wow. And it is great capacity, fast, and with low latency, the time elapsed waiting for a response. The obvious use of 5G is to provide capacity to fill the spectrum demands for what we now know now. Video. Video is the king. This is where we're all going, is to video. There is nothing to be ashamed of here, it says. A study of 5G manufacturer Ericsson found that 5G adoption would come in three phases. The first phase would be premium smartphone downloads of content. Usually this is video content, in seconds rather than minutes. Boy, then won't that be nice out here on the coast? That'll be really nice. This would be followed by 5G home wireless broadband to challenge traditional cable TV, video and broadband delivered video. And the final phase, Ericsson predicts, is 5G hot zones of ultra high speed in airports, offices, and shopping areas. I don't know about you, but I'm getting fired up about 5G. Come on. While 5G will drive mobile video services, any consideration of what 5G will be must take notice of the immutable lesson of network history. That is, it is not the primary network that is transformative, but its secondary effects. Quote, if we've learned anything in the generational march through wireless connectivity, the 2016 Press Club remarks remind us, continued quote, it is that we have always underestimated the innovation that would result from new generations of wireless networks, end quote. 3G networks, for instance, were built on an economic model that did not anticipate how the iPhone would change the nature of these networks. The technology of 5G networks far exceeds the technological upgrade from 2G to 3G. Yet, looking at what that earlier upgrade unexpectedly enabled, we cannot underestimate what's next. The immutable law of network history will again repeat itself as the 5G network spawns transformational secondary effects. What is 5G technology and 5G spectrum? The technical standards for 5G remain a work in progress. The International Standards Setting Group, 3GPP, operates by periodic releases that roughly coincide with network generations. Release 15 includes many key functionalities which some would consider low-hanging fruit. However, Release 15 has been pushed back by 3 months into the third quarter of 2019. The final release will come mid-2020. The first iterations of Release 16, which will contain key standards necessary for the Internet of Things, will not be available until 2020, with the final standard some significant time after. Even after a standard is released, it takes years for it to be widely implemented. You know what? This is such a cool time in history to be alive. There's a lot of folks listening in on the Ocean Mist Power Hour here on KCIW that can remember life before the internet. I know that sounds shocking, but we can, right? I remember before the internet. I mean, I talked earlier about the dial-up on the modem and all of that, but I remember before the internet even happened. Shoot, I remember before cell phones happened. God, even when I was a kid, I remember when TV came out, and I'm not even that old. I mean, I'm gonna be 58 this year, but I remember when TV was really super new and when color TV came out. So, I mean, kids today, they know what to do with an iPad by the time they're a year old. That blows my mind. Ah, okay, enough ranting. 5G is the combination of innovative radio and core network technologies. Now, that's an interesting statement. 5G is the combination of innovative radio and core network technologies. Everything is now reduced to data. And since IP, Internet Protocol, is the single language of 5G, everything simply becomes an IP app. There are three unique but interrelated factors at the heart of the 5G standard. Here they are: greater spectral efficiency, greater spectrum pathways, and the distribution outward of core network functions. Let's look at those individually. So, greater spectral efficiency. The greater the spectral efficiency measured in bits per hertz, the greater a cell site's capacity. A 5G network puts more bits through a given amount of spectrum by 1, optimizing the signal controlled overhead, 2, thereby making more of the spectrum available for traffic. 3, mitigating degrading radio interference. And 4, the use of multiple input, multiple output antennas that break a transmission into multiple streams across a common channel. By one estimate, using these technologies expands the spectral efficiency of mid-band 5G by 52% over 4G. Wow, you know, I'm sitting here in a radio studio recording on radio equipment and just kind of sitting here wondering, in the future, how will 5G change what we do here at KCIW? Will the technology change? Will the equipment change? Will the process change? I imagine all those things are going to get different over time. The second part was greater spectrum pathways. So while greater spectral efficiency gets more throughput for each hertz of spectrum, the more hertz that can be used, the greater the total throughput. Boy, this is getting technical even for me. I'm not really a very technical person, but this is technical. This is accomplished by aggregating existing spectrum assignments and or by the allocation of new greenfield spectrum. Who knows what that is? The first is a function of carrier spectrum management, and the second, a matter of government spectrum management. Interesting. Existing mobile spectrum assignments are typically 10 to 20 megahertz blocks. The larger the amount of spectrum available, the more data that can be driven through it. Thus, a concept that has been the backbone of wireless technology since the earliest days of cellular has been combined with the basic concepts of a distributed packet network to introduce carrier aggregation that virtualizes a broader pathway. You can totally tell that the chief of the Federal Communications said this stuff, right? I mean, like, this report was written by the chief of the FCC. Like, I'm reading it going, That's awesome. One channel of spectrum is used to control the other channels that deliver the content. Then the information is broken into pieces to be sent over multiple different pathways and reassembled at the destination. Oh my gosh, it's like the virtual equivalent of a Star Trek generator. You know, what was the thing on Star Trek that they used to make food, right? They walk up to the computer and they're like, hey, make me a latte. A replicator. Yeah, sort of like a replicator. It's like a sound replicator. It takes the sound in, it breaks it down into little pieces, sends it over multiple different pathways and reassembles it at the destination. Hello, Scotty, beam me up. In 4G LTE, the first evolutionary step toward 5G, and LTE stands for long-term evolution, carrier aggregation can bond up to 5 20 megahertz channels into a virtually expanded pathway, thus decoupling the control of the network from the carriage of data. 5G makes independently scalable to further increase throughput. God, guys, things are going to get really fast. You know, I'm starting to think about so many different ways that technology is going to shape our lives. And it's fun if you think about, you know, what's it going to look like in 100 years? Well, if the Earth makes it through climate crisis, maybe we'll be here in 100 years. What's it going to be like in 80 years? This kind of technology is really getting us to the point of saying, what's it going to be like in 10 years, in 5 years? I mean, they're talking about this full rollout by 2022. There is, of course, management overhead in carrier aggregation. The optimal solution is to remove that overhead by making available large swaths of spectrum that can carry large amounts of data. Using greenfield spectrum for 5G, up to 5 100 megahertz channels can be aggregated for speeds up to 20 times faster. Whoa! This is what makes the millimeter wave high band spectrum above 6 gigahertz attractive, the availability of hundreds of megahertz in one place. Unfortunately, however, all spectrum is not created equal. No one has repealed the laws of physics. The higher you go in frequency, the more oxygen eats at the signal to reduce the distance it can travel. This is blowing my mind. And the more that obstacles such as walls, trees, or people can block the signal. Oh my gosh. While 5G networks are being built in low band, below 2 gigahertz, mid band, between 2 and 6 gigahertz, and high band, above 6 gigahertz, the distance the signal can travel moves from miles to meters as you progress up the frequencies. That's such a trip. As a result, the higher the frequency, the smaller the cell radius, and the more cells required to cover an area, the more infrastructure required to support the cells, and the greater the cost of the network. Whoa, that's freaking me out. It's blowing my mind. And it's kind of making me wonder, like, there's all these people that are out there in social media talking about how 5G is going to ruin the world and 5G is going to kill us all. And I can, now that I'm reading this stuff, I'm like, oh, I see where they're coming from. They're all kind of freaking out. But don't we do that? Aren't we people? Don't we freak out when there's big changes? This is a really big change. I had no idea how big it was until right now. Literally, I'm learning this along with you. So spectrum policy decisions for 5G represent a trade-off between the physics of the frequencies. This whole physics of the frequencies thing is just like freaking me out. It's blowing my mind. I had no idea there were physics of frequencies. And the ability to have broad channels capable of carrying large amounts of data. Such broad channels are more readily available in the high spectrum bands. 5G spectrum allocations have thus far focused on these so-called millimeter wave bands. The difficulty with this decision, one anonymous White House official told the Washington Post after President Donald Trump held a White House event to tout an upcoming high-band spectrum auction at the FCC, is that, quote, "We are winning a race that no one else is running to build a 5G ecosystem that no one will use," end quote. That's a weird statement. While it is not quite that simple, high-band spectrum will play a part in a 5G future, but it is only a part. Now, I'm thinking about ways that a whole virtual network will vastly change our lives. I mean, if you think about it right now, self-driving cars are a reality. People are driving them. You know, you could go down the highway and see someone driving in a Tesla, and they kind of pretend it's fun and cute to sit there and read the newspaper while they're driving. They can do that. You know, the guy in Florida who became decapitated because he was watching a movie and not paying attention while he was ripping down the highway in his Tesla that was driving itself is evidence of the fact that self-driving cars are out there. And they're, you know, everyone has adaptive cruise control now. If you've got a newer model car, it's tracking all the cars around you and making adjustments on your speed and your distance and everything based on traffic, real-time data right now. I like to think that, you know, the cars of the future, they have radar, sonar, cameras, GPS, those are four big technologies. You hope the last technology is human technology. You kind of hope that there's a smart human driving the car that might say, hey, you know, there's someone who can make the ultimate decision. And I think really when I think about where 5G is taking us, it sounds to me like we have to really be knowledgeable about where it's going. We have to be participants in the technology as it moves forward. We have to decide, do we want to use it? How do we want to use it? How are we going to integrate this kind of technology into our lives? And you know what? A lot of it's going to happen whether we want it or not. It's coming. And as I said earlier, the answer is always no unless you ask. So ask questions of yourself right now. Do I want to use it? How do I want to use it? How do I want to put this to my life? And it's interesting, isn't it, that Verizon has already have, you know, already has a contest at how to build apps on 5G. That's fantastic. It says here that low-band spectrum has long been the mainstay of wireless service and was made even more plentiful by the Obama FCC's transfer of such spectrum from use by local broadcasters to wireless use. Such low-band spectrum has been assigned to networks in smaller size blocks than high-band's assignment. Remember what they said about the high bands? It has shorter distance, and oxygen and physics can, you know, actual physical stuff can get in the way of it. That's just so weird. Therefore, even with aggregation, the total spectrum available to carry the data, and thus the data throughput, is less than high band. Mid-band spectrum is Goldilocks spectrum. The potential for larger blocks that are not too small for higher throughput, while not too high to impose serious propagation constraints. As a result, mid-band spectrum has increasingly become a focus of policy planners. That's interesting. However, the potential use for mid-band 5G runs headlong into the other controlling factor in spectrum utilization. That is this. The most attractive spectrum has long been allocated for other purposes. These spectrum allocations were made in the analog era, based on the behavior of radio waves. However, the characteristics of digital signals allow more efficient spectrum usage, including spectrum sharing. So your home Wi-Fi, for instance, does not interfere with your neighbor's Wi-Fi because Wi-Fi is a listen-before-talk technology in which packets of data can be inserted into milliseconds of unused capacity. Weird? Wow. Like how many, when you get on your internet at home, you know, sometimes you get kicked off or you come back from a trip and you bust out the laptop or the iPad and you know, you open up the little Wi-Fi app and it shows you, oh, here's Jim and here's Mary and here's, you know, ocean and here's beachfront and, you know, all these different things. I think mine's called Ocean Mist. That makes sense, right? But I always kind of wondered that, like, how come mine doesn't interfere with my neighbors? And you know, the other thing I've always wondered, and maybe you have too, how do they do that thing where you're in a hotel room and your hotel room is open for your Wi-Fi, but when, or you're in a conference, let's say you're in a conference room at a hotel and you've got the Wi-Fi in the conference room, but if you walk out of the conference room, your Wi-Fi doesn't work anymore. Like, how do they do that? How do they build a little digital fence around a Wi-Fi signal? I mean, that's just crazy. Somebody knows how to do that. The listen before talk capability of digital technology formed the backbone of the Obama FCC's citizen broadband radio spectrum allocation. The Goldilocks zone spectrum between 3.55 and 3.7 megahertz is a wide swath, but is being used by the Defense Department, principally the Navy. Interesting. Using digital signal sensing capabilities, however, it is possible to share the spectrum. A tiering of use priorities was negotiated with the Navy getting priority and commercial users being able to plug their packets in when not in use. So similar to Wi-Fi, this non-usage is often measured in milliseconds. Wow. It's so much more detailed than I ever thought. Now, we're going to wrap it up here pretty soon because we're coming to the end of the Ocean Mist Power Hour. So again, if you have just joined us or if you've been with us on this crazy, wacky, wonderful, wide ride through 5G in five not-so-easy pieces, remember, you can go read the full report and finish this whole entire interesting story right on brookings.edu. Type in 5G in five not-so-easy pieces, and you can read the rest of it. So just as no one has repealed the laws of physics, however, so are the laws of human nature in full force. Having received a spectrum assignment, most licensees are loath to relinquish what they consider their God-given spectrum rights to digital performance assumptions like spectrum sharing. So you know how it is. Like, once somebody gives something to you, you don't want to give it back. As then Assistant Secretary for Commerce for Technology and Information, David Reddle told a satellite industry conference, quote, "In this era of competition for spectrum resources, it can be easy to think that we're in the winner-take-all battle. But that mindset asks us to make false choices that will shortchange America." Well, that's all we have time for today. And this has been a great time with you on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. Thank you for joining us here in Brookings Harbor, Oregon on KCIW 100.7 FM, right here in Brookings, the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest, where the mountains and the redwoods meet the sea. Harbor Brookings is home to me. I'm your host, Misty Young, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.